Thanks for listening to this podcast of Faith Radio Mornings from Faith Radio. Today is the day you have made. I will rejoice and be glad in it. Today is the day you have made. I will rejoice and be glad in it. And I won't worry about tomorrow. I'm trusting in what you say. Today is the day. Good morning. It is the 17th of August. The sun is rising and the Son of God is risen. That tomb is still empty this morning, and that is the central good news of the gospel that we proclaim as we start each morning here together on Faith Radio Mornings. For sin is forgiven, death is beaten, and we always have hope and always have future in the beautiful kingdom of Jesus. So welcome, everyone, to Faith Radio Mornings. I'm your host, Dr. Peter Kapsner, where we celebrate this hope that we have each morning together as we go through some of the news of the day and the conversations in our world from a Christian perspective. Joined in studio by Logan Roush, who runs the sound and board, keeps things running smoothly on morning, and Paul Perot in the newsroom, who makes sure I sound at least mildly current when we go through the different news and conversations of the day. And there was pretty big news coming out of Motown and Detroit yesterday, and that was the passing of Aretha Franklin, really an icon in the music industry. Friends and celebrities are praying for her surviving family. Diana Ross, another of these icons from Motown, said that she's sitting in prayer for the wonderful and golden spirit. Barack Obama and Michelle Obama chimed in, said the Queen of Soul helped define the American experience with her voice. They said her voice allowed every shade of the country's history to be felt. And they were sending their prayers and warmest sympathies to her family. Just some of the tributes that are coming in for Aretha Franklin. I know she was a significant voice of music in my life growing up and really did a lot to normalize some of the relationships between African Americans and white people in our country, just bringing us together with music. And actually got an email from Carmen LaBurge, who's my Friday conversation partner, going through the news and the headlines saying, do we want to talk Aretha today? And of course, absolutely. And so we're going to actually bring Carmen in. She is the midday host of Connecting Faith, does such a great job in that program. Thought it'd be fun to have her join early in the conversation and chat just a little bit about Aretha. So good morning, Carmen. Are you there?
Good morning, Peter.
Yeah, so, I mean, it was a big headline, right, Carmen? And how are you sort of processing the passing of an icon here?
So I think that as other African-American women are in the news today as well, seeking platforms in the media, here is a woman who we must celebrate, should celebrate, and can celebrate. And I think that for Christians who are looking for news they can use today in sort of our own conversational apologetics to till the soil of cultural conversations, Aretha Franklin provides that, and her passing provides that, and the way in which people are talking about her provides that. So just use what the news is offering you today. If you're a Christian, use the language of the gospel. One of the things that you're going to hear about Aretha Franklin over and over and over again is that not only is her voice formed in the life of the church, and that is her first platform in terms of a singing opportunity, but that by her own testimony, she did not view herself as making a transition from gospel to pop. Mm. She actually described the gospel as going with her. She viewed what she did as advancing the gospel. And so I think that's an important part of the storyline. Mainstream media is probably not going to amplify that as much as Christians can and should in our conversations with one another.
Well, I think it's so well said, Carmen. And when we came into the studio this morning, we were recognizing just her history and the depth of sort of the gospel music that she brought. And Paul Perot in the newsroom had pulled out a clip from her singing Amazing Grace. She grew up in a family where that was how she started singing, was in the gospel, in that genre of music. And so we're going to go to break here before you and I start our conversations of the day with a clip, extended clip of her singing Amazing Grace.
Amazing Grace. sound. Going up to the spirit in the sky. That's where I'm gonna go when I die. Well, welcome back to Faith Radio Mornings. I'm your host, Peter Kapsner, and you've already heard the voice of Carmen LaBurge, who is the midday host for the show, Connecting Faith here on Faith Radio. And Carmen, you do such a great job of connecting the news with our journey. And boy, those singing pipes of Aretha Franklin, they just give me chills when I hear, especially when she sings a song like Amazing Grace.
Absolutely. And I think that, I mean, even when we're having conversations like in the news at the top of the hour, conversations about social justice and whether or not, that's a conversation that white evangelical Christians know how to enter into with listening ears and with respect. Aretha Franklin is actually a person who is on the front lines of what we all now know as the civil rights movement. She was a feminist before that was a thing. And I think that when we talk about things happening in the culture and we talk about the way music is a part of that and the way music moves us, it's important to recognize that this particular African-American woman, a person of very deep faith, a person who had a pretty complicated life, is actually sort of a living, now living again, testimony to what diversity can look like in our culture, and with respect. And she was a freedom advocate. And so I just think, Peter, that there's lots of storylines in the news today where, Aretha Franklin can still bear positive testimony in our conversations.
Yeah. And she, the music allowed for this sort of unifying voice among both African-American and white people and across the racial divide that's there. It somehow has a way of joining us together in some ways that other things don't. And her singing about the kingdom in that way, it was sort of, maybe you can take a step back and say, wait, we're on this journey together, or we can be, in music, and especially gospel music, can really bring us together.
Yeah, I think there's no doubt about that.
Well, lots of headlines to get to with you this morning. I know that any number of things. One of the topics of conversation that was sent to me from yesterday about that we could talk about is that this case of Jack Phillips in the state of Colorado and this baker situation in which did not want to make a cake for a gay couple and seemed like maybe that was put to rest, the conversation, but now it's rearing up again. So talk us through what's happening here.
So literally every newspaper in the country has been running articles this week, certainly in the last 48 hours, on the case of Jack Phillips. The one that I would encourage people to read, if they're going to read one, is Jack Phillips' own op-ed, which appeared yesterday in the USA Today. And in there, Jack actually describes his own experience. And I actually think that for Christians, hearing a person tell their own story, we actually know the impact of that. We can also learn from them the kind of language that they would prefer we use, which in other circumstances, Peter, seems to be, of the highest level of concern, right? We always want to be talking about things in the way those directly affected want to hear those things talked about. Well, so in this case, I just say, let's just respect Jack Phillips enough to actually read his own op-ed about his own experience of not only a victory in the Supreme Court on his behalf, but then the Colorado Civil Rights Commission coming after him. I mean, literally coming after him. I think there's no question here that there is a group of activist individuals on the Colorado Civil Rights Commission who are seeking to destroy an individual because they disagree with his religious beliefs. I think that's what's going on here. I think that's what will be proven out in this latest case. Let's just quickly brief people in on what's happening. Jack Phillips, the owner, he's a cake artist. He owns a little shop called Masterpiece Cake Shop in Lakewood, Colorado. More than 6 years ago now, this journey started when someone asked him to bake a cake expressly celebrating a same-sex wedding. Jack serves all customers. He does not make all cakes. That's the distinction here that I think people need to be aware of. Jack serves all customers. He doesn't bake all cakes. And so the cake that he was asked to bake would for him have been a creative act, an expressive act, which in the United States of America is protected speech. Like, you and I cannot be compelled to say something on air, even if the government tells us to, that's contrary to our religious beliefs. Jack, likewise, cannot be compelled by the government to bake a cake that is then decorated and celebrates that's a sign, a symbol of something that is contrary to his sincerely held religious beliefs. Ultimately, I'm not sure that's the point of the law that the U.S. Supreme Court decided on, because Jack experienced so much hostility toward him by the Colorado Civil Rights Commission that what the Supreme Court actually decided was the state treated him differently as a religious person, real animus toward him as a religious person. And that's really what the Supreme Court sort of condemned in his case, was the bias, the clear religious bias of the Colorado Civil Rights Commission. Well, less than a month after the Supreme Court's ruling, that Civil Rights Commission found cause to bring another charge against Jack Phillips. And that's the conversation we're now having. A transgender activist on multiple occasions sought to have Jack produce cakes that are very expressly contrary to his religious beliefs. One celebrating Satan, one very, very, I mean, I can't even describe it on air because it's so sexually explicit. And then one gender transition reveal cake, which would have been pink on the inside and frosted with blue icing. Mm. So that's the conversation we're now having.
Well, and I think what's so interesting about it, and you mentioned just the activism behind it, is, of course, the upside of social activism is that it causes and can really highlight significantly needed change in our society. Sometimes the downside of it is that activism, the activists need some sort of thing to activate against, and sometimes they'll pick what might be the most significant headlines to raise the profile of their cause. So there's sort of this upside-downside activism, and it seems like there's this recognition that if they can keep plugging away at Jack, that they can really highlight their cause, that maybe there's really not that much here that we need to consider.
And I would also say that they are seeking to produce a deterrent effect. If you can convince Christians out there across the country that even if you win at the Supreme Court, we're not going to stop. We are going to be relentless in our persecution of you until you bow the knee to our sexual agenda. I mean, I think that's what's going on here. I think there is an attempt here to make Jack Phillips an exemplar, to say it doesn't matter what the Supreme Court says. We're going to continue to do this until a person is either compelled to do what we want them to do, or they're going to close up shop. So I feel like that's what's going on here. And I guess I'm very hopeful that the Colorado Civil Rights Commission will be dealt with in a very punitive way in order that this stops, because it's not just Colorado. These cases are actually taking place across the country, just not at the level of profile of Jack Phillips.
That's Carmen LeBurge of Connecting Faith. Carmen will take a short break. When we come back, there's lots more to get into, including the fact that as the things are getting revealed in the sexual abuse cases within the Catholic Church, such a troubling story, it just seems like it's going deeper and deeper. And then Chelsea Clinton came out as well recently and said that, or at least suggested that abortion might be good for our economy. So much more to come here on Faith Radio Mornings. That's a bit more from Aretha Franklin. Carmen, you are my friend here on Friday mornings on Faith Radio. And boy, I could listen to that music all morning. Maybe we should just stop the news headlines right now and just sort of take in Aretha for the next 10 minutes.
So we could do that. We actually have a music format here at Faith Radio, and it's not this one. So there's only a very few places where Christians get to talk on the radio, so I think that we should take advantage of it.
Okay, fair enough. Well, there is lots to get to, of course. And, of course, one of the troubling headlines that kind of keeps emerging, and it came out significantly earlier this week out of a Pennsylvania grand jury decision, and as a result of their investigation, they have said that there is up to 300 predator priests that were participating in the sexual abuse of children within the Catholic Church, maybe over 1,000 children impacted by this. It doesn't get more troubling than this, Carmen.
No, it doesn't. And the victim testimonies continue to emerge and fill the headlines. And this has been a story, you know, Peter, all week that we've talked about on Connecting Faith, because I really think that part of what we have to do as Christians in the middle of this conversation is turn to anyone around us, obviously in private moments where it's appropriate, and actually say to each other, did anything like this ever happen to you? because the silence and the shame surrounding this kind of abuse has kept victims quiet for their whole lives. And so what this case in Pennsylvania, you know, pulls back the very, very ugly curtain on is that things have been going on. I mean, these cases go back 70 years in some cases. This has been going on. It is pervasive. It is systemic. It is not confined to Pennsylvania and six dioceses there. And so we absolutely must assume that if we grew up Catholic, if we have friends who grew up Catholic, and then let's be quick to say this is not confined to Roman Catholicism, because we certainly know that there are predator priests outside of the Roman Catholic Church. And so I really feel strongly that for Christians, one of the conversations that absolutely must happen is that we find opportunity, we make opportunity to say to one another, did anything like this ever happen to you? And if you are a listener right now for whom the answer to that question is yes, we want to encourage you to tell someone. Tell someone. Do not continue to live with the shame and the humiliation of something that someone did to you that you did not deserve and for which you are not responsible, but certainly from which you can be redeemed. A full life can be redeemed. Because Christ is real, even when people misrepresent him in this world. So those would be the messages that I hope listeners would take today in their own ministry of conversation with others.
I think it's such an important word, Carmen. And as you said, that there is the troubling headlines coming out of the churches, but it is a misrepresentation of the kingdom. And that's part of what we're going to have to wrestle through in the weeks and months ahead, not only from the Roman Catholic Church, but some of the headlines coming out of Willow Creek, such an instrumental church from a Protestant standpoint. And just to recognize that the kingdom isn't always represented well by the human institutions involved. And to your point about coming into the light, I know that in teaching a sexuality course for the last 10 years or so, it's every term that a student or two or three will feel the freedom to just say, you know what, this was part of my past. And boy, those are such hard and difficult steps, but they are the first steps to freedom and hope and healing. Because that tomb is empty, there really is hope. It's not a magic hope. It takes a while, but you can be restored.
Absolutely. And there are lots of good ministries and lots of good resources out there in relationship to the recovery from sexual trauma and sexual abuse. And I do think that in terms of where we are in our cultural conversations as a nation, it's a terrible way to say this, but like, it's a good time.
Yeah.
It's a good time to come forward. It's this is a season, I think, during which there's a receptivity, to hear. There's a receptivity to hear. And so we're listening. And if you're a person who has something to say on this subject, you know, I really think now's the time to come forward and share your own pain and your own experience, and then allow yourself to be redeemed from it.
It's Carmen LeBurge of Connecting Faith. And Carmen, we've got a couple minutes left. There's one more headline. You know, you and I deal with the news all day long and sort of get over being shocked by any given headline. But I will say this one got my attention, and that is that Chelsea Clinton, the daughter, obviously, of Bill and Hillary Clinton, came out recently in support of the Supreme Court Roe versus Wade decision that legalized abortion. She said it was good for two reasons. One, because it gave women the dignity to make our own choices, which is the common argument. But she also said something in addition to that. She said that it led to a $3.5 trillion boost to the American economy because we've aborted 60 million children over this time, that not having them as part of the economy has really led to a much healthier economy.
I know. I'm almost rendered speechless, which is a bad thing for a radio talk show host. So I think that, again, the personal stories are the ones that we need to find and elevate in relationship to this. I know post-abortive women who would absolutely say that whatever financial blessings they have enjoyed since that point in time and since making that decision, they would give it all up to have that baby back. And so I think that we have to recognize not only the value of every human life from God's perspective. But I think, like Chelsea Clinton, we have to be able to say, hey, if those 60 million Americans were actually in the workforce today, they would have contributed far more than $3.5 trillion to the American economy. It's impossible to estimate what would have been the economic impact of those people actually being allowed to live.
And that was the sort of the counterpoint that this is, you know, maybe based on fuzzy math at best. And to your point, Carmen, as we just talked about, this is another situation when people have been impacted deeply. There can be a lot of shame about past decisions. And this is another one of those things that within the kingdom of God, there is always hope in future. It doesn't mean we don't have to wrestle through these difficult parts of our past. But for women and men that have made choices of abortion in the past, there's still hope into the future, right?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I think that there's no question about that. I've become aware recently, like, because I'm not a person who was married at a stage in life when I had my own kids, I'm now aware of this like heartache and this expectation of heaven that not only women who are post-abortive, but women who and actually dads who lost children in miscarriage. Like, they actually live with this joyful anticipation and expectation of meeting their children for the first time in heaven. And I didn't even know that was a thing until very recent conversations with a young mom and actually a granddad who, I mean, he came right out and said, he has this big smile on his face. And he's like, I have kids I've never met. That's one of my joys of anticipating actually dying and going to heaven, is that I'm going to actually meet the children I've never met. And that's something, Peter, that I have to admit to you, I had never even thought about before.
I'm so glad you brought it up. That is a recent conversation in my own life, too, where that is one of those places of hope. And I hadn't thought about it before either, Carmen, but this does speak to the idea that the kingdom knows no end. And so, hey, thanks for your perspective and your wisdom. I love having you as a conversation partner on these Friday mornings on Faith Radio Mornings. Just give us a quick hint of what's coming up on Connecting Faith later today.
Today, I'm going to talk with Lee Strobel about his new book, The Case for Miracles. So if people love The Case for Christ, he is now making The Case for Miracles. So I'm excited about that conversation.
That sounds like a great program. Have a great rest of your morning, Carmen, and lots more to come here on Faith Radio Mornings. Love that conversation with Carmen, just that pastoral voice that she has in the midst of these headlines, and just so helpful to remind us that if there's pain in our past, there's always hope in the future. So great conversation there. We'll take a break for news, and when we come back for the second half of our first hour, we'll be joined by friend of the program, Gary Stratton, and we'll talk about the importance of listening to one another.
The question, why did you become a pastor, is one I'm pleased to answer. This is Jim Garlow. First, it's God's call on my life. But the framework of that calling began when I was a child. Church was always an adventure to us as a family. Even on vacations, going to worship service was a meaningful part of each trip. Even guests who came to visit our home knew that on Sunday morning they'd be going to church with us. Never treat church as just one of several options. If you're not in a church worth the commitment for you and your family, then find one that is. It isn't the task of the church to get Jesus into the life of your kids. That's you as parents. The purpose of a church is to support you as a unique family unit, one that God has ordained to help you to do your job in establishing Jesus in the heart of your child. This is Jim Garlow. There's more at jimgarlow.com.
It is 22 minutes before the top of the hour here on Faith Radio Mornings. I'm your host, Dr. Peter Kapsner, and thrilled to be joined by our Friday regular guest, Dr. Gary Stratton of Johnson University. He's a dean there and focuses a lot on spiritual formation and worldview and how we are formed by the events of our world, and specifically how we are formed when we are entering in a relationship with God. And I know that Gary was on the line a second ago, but suddenly Gary dropped. So maybe the phone lines between here and Tennessee, where Gary is, maybe they got severed. But we're going to talk about this morning a bit about listening as we get him back in the line. And me being the theological nerd that I am, I know in yesterday's show, we started with a quote from Dietrich Bonhoeffer about the importance of listening. And I'm going to read that, and then Gary and I will have a chance to talk about that too. It says, "The first service one owes to others in a community involves listening to them. Just as our love for God begins with listening to God's word, the beginning of love for others is learning to listen to them. For God's love for us is shown in the fact that he not only gives us his word, but he lends us his ear. And so we do God's work for our brothers and sisters when we learn to listen to them. And I know Gary's back on the line. Good morning, Gary.
Good morning, Peter. How are you?
I'm doing well. You know, it was fun to interact yesterday just over email a little bit about this subject of listening. And it's one of those things that it's not necessarily an established practice in our society anymore, right? I mean, Twitter isn't, don't you find, Gary, that Twitter is the very best place to enter into a mutual conversation of listening and love for one another?
Oh, my gosh. I was just helping a student manage their way through this flaming Twitter battle the other day. No one's listening to one another. It's all just trying to formulate a combative comeback.
I remember the first time that I was trolled on Twitter. I didn't even know it was a thing to be trolled. I understood trolls to be these creatures from Lord of the Rings, and I thought I was having sort of an interesting back and forth in social media channels, and every response was antagonistic, and I was like, what is happening? And then I finally got clued in, oh, this is what it feels like to get trolled.
Yeah. Oh, I know. It's amazing the difference between how introverts and extroverts engage with other people when they come into a setting, whether it's a internet setting or a public setting or in a room or a church small group. That extroverts tend to look at things like life is a show, kind of like an athlete or performer. Everyone I meet is either an audience I have to impress or a competition I have to beat. Whereas introverts, life is like a scientific experiment, like a detached manager looking at bugs, you know, under a microscope or in their natural environment. I'm observing but not engaging with the subjects of my study. And the internet just expands those things in the craziest ways, and it is not a healthy environment.
Yeah, it certainly is not a medium for mutual listening and conversation. And with that being increasingly lost, perhaps, as we're engaged in these electronic platforms of communication, what do we lose, Gary, when we're losing just the ability to sit across from one another and actually truly listen, not just be there and not sort of, you know, be just flesh and blood together, but really listen to one another?
Well, we're losing genuine intimacy and genuine what the Bible calls koinonia, fellowship in a group of people. But it's a process we have to walk through, and it's very much like I'll risk a little bit, and if you respond properly, I'll risk a little bit more, and then you have to risk a little bit, this back-and-forth thing that happens, but it all is founded on listening. I decide whether or not you are a safe person. But kind of like a dolphin trying to decide whether coming to a harbor is safe. It's all by echolocation. And if what's bouncing back to me is not safe, I'm out of there.
It's so true. And that's I know those conversations I've had where I've been in conversation. It's even just me and you together. When we listen to one another, it really does form those bonds of friendship that I can be pretty suspicious, I think, because so many of the environments that we are in life don't really involve authentic listening, whether it's family, whether it's church, whether it's our work environment. I can't think of many work environments that I've been in where there really is a mutual listening and respect for one another. It's usually who has what power, and then that power tends to win the day depending on the hierarchy of the organization. And that kind of starts sucking the life out of the soul.
Oh, it does. And, you know, what tends to happen in our culture, we don't get any genuine solitude at any time where we develop self-awareness and spiritual awareness and God awareness, is that we come into public settings very needy. We're not coming to give, we're coming to get. And we all have our different strategies of things we're trying to get. And so we're, you know, more formulating the next thing we're going to say instead of actually genuinely engaging with that person, or trying to look for, if you're an introvert, trying to look for a way to duck out of that conversation as quickly as possible.
Yeah, absolutely. And that silence and solitude, you and I have talked about that on the air before, just the importance of getting away, sort of taking a breath. I know we all have a lot of pressures on our lives. And so there really is almost, in some of these environments, again, and we'll talk both about work and family today, but in the work environment, there's so much pressure just to survive, just to try to hit whatever numbers you have to hit to do your job description well. And so there's risk, actually, to listen to other people because you're so often just trying to survive yourself.
No, you are. And all of us have horrible stories in our life. And the older you get, the worse it gets, whether it's in a work environment or in a church environment where I've shared something with someone who wasn't safe, and it's either been passed along to others in a way that was very painful, or it's been used against me. So we get more and more, my wife calls it turtling, just more and more into our shell and less likely to stick our neck out into genuine community and risk.
So if I'm a person that doesn't listen terribly well, again, whether it's a work environment or a family, what are some things that I can do to sort of open up that part of me to really listen to other people?
Well, it's a process you've got to learn. You kind of got to develop almost some mantras for yourself to say when you're going into group environments. And I have ones that I say to myself, don't duck out, don't seek to strive or impress, don't amp up and take over the situation. Just kind of know your own personal strategies. And then just to carefully walk through the process. That if someone's sharing something at a very factual level with me, which happens all the time, I need to meet that with acceptance. They need, I'm trying to formulate a question to answer, to ask, or a mirroring back of what they said instead of a witty response to it or a combative response to it. But, once we do that with somebody, we have that sense of acceptance from them, we start to trust them, we begin to share at a deeper level, kind of more of our feelings, our deep-held opinions. And if that's met with affirmation, now that some genuine authenticity starts to come in the relationship, I start to be able to share with someone my fears of what's going to happen in my life or with my kids, and we can begin to truly pray for another deeper level. And if that's met with genuine authenticity on the part of the other person, now we have real genuine accountability where I actually can share with you my failings, and we can get into real true intimacy and community. But, so much of these accountability groups are trying to rush into that process, and it just actually does more harm than good.
Gary, think about all the listeners that are heading to work even right now as they're listening in the car, or maybe they've arrived to work and it's streaming in their background and thinking this isn't an environment where there is a lot of listening. I know you worked in Hollywood for 7 years. I can't imagine there was a lot of listening done there. And so, when we're in our workplace for 30, 40, 50, 60 hours a week, and maybe there isn't this mutual conversation, how do you sort of preserve your heart a bit in that when you know that in your conversations, there might be some transactional things that happen in the relationship, and we sort of, out of convenience, we'll speak to each other for our own personal goals. But when there's not that authenticity and that intimacy, how can you preserve that as part of your heart? Because it's so important.
Well, it just takes a radical commitment to live your life in the benefit of others. That is one way you can really stand out in an environment like Hollywood or your workplace, where you're actually genuinely caring about the person instead of just scoring points or moving forward in the conversation. And in Hollywood, it's called shoulder surfing, that I'm in a public setting and I'm talking to one person, but I'm looking over their shoulder for someone else who's more important, who can help me more, able to build my network more. And to go into situations saying, I am not going to do that. I'm going to engage the person I'm talking to, whether they're a bigwig producer or they're a craft services table server. I mean, I'm going to engage them as a human being made in the image of God, who Christ died for and loves. And I want the love of Christ to come through me by my servant leadership in listening.
It can become a real catalytic environment then, right? I mean, the energy that comes, and I have been a part of organizations and churches and in business environments where there is this mutuality of listening and sort of recognizing everybody's got stuff to bring to the table, and God really has given us gifts moving forward. And boy, when there gets to be that trust on your work team or in your church, it really kind of has this really interesting catalytic effect.
Well, it does. It's absolutely fascinating. For my doctoral program, I did a lot of literature review and a study on the difference between work groups and teams. That a work group is kind of where everybody just comes with their own various reports on what's going on in their area, and they're guarding their silo. And then a team is where you actually start really creating synthesis of working together towards the common mission of the school. But what was missed in so much of the literature was how community is the foundation for both of those. That if I don't have a deep sense of community and connection to those people, then I'm going to be very competitive and fighting for my sense of the pie and the work group. I'm going to not be sharing my best self and truly belonging and being and giving my best ideas in the synthesis situation, in the team situation. So if we're not building a sense of community and connection, then we're not going anywhere in the workplace.
That's great. This is Dr. Gary Stratton. Gary, we're going to take a short break and we come back. Obviously, listening is critical to a healthy marriage relationship. And I would just guess that you and I, we've both been married for a long time. We've probably gone through seasons where listening wasn't really part of the deal. So we'd love to get into that more when we come back on Faith Radio Mornings. Welcome back to Faith Radio Mornings. I'm your host, Peter Kapsner, and love the dialogue and conversation with Dr. Gary Stratton about just things, ways in which we can develop character qualities consistent with the kingdom so that we together as believers can shine a brighter light in this world. And Gary, our subject this morning is learning how to listen. And I know for me, one of the places that I've had to come to grips with is that listening really requires first and foremost a bit of humility, that maybe whatever my perspective is, it may not be the perspective. I tend to think that my perspective is consistent with the kingdom perspective in all things, but boy, it requires some humility to say I might not have it all right so that it can create space to listen to one another.
Yeah, it is amazing how human beings just assume that they are always right, that their point of view is the correct point of view. It is reliably not.
And I think that then to the extent that I can engage in that humility and just say, hang on just a minute, it really does, again, create space for intimacy and vulnerability and a much better reality moving forward when we work together on stuff. And that's true in marriage, too, right, Gary? I know I can get home from a day at work or there's just, you know, different pressures and stuff, and I kind of want to retreat into a shell a little bit. And the next thing I know, maybe Hallie and I have gone through pretty long seasons where I just haven't just taken the time to really listen well. But boy, if we do that work, it really is wonderful for the marriage.
Now, it transformed our marriage when I suddenly realized that I'm an extrovert and tend towards that direction. My wife tends towards introversion. And I realized how much of our conversations were kind of one way. Because she's a very good listener. And I started, I'm going to start listening to her and I'm going to ask a follow-up question.
Mm.
And then she would share a little more. And then I'd ask the second follow-up question. And it was at the second follow-up question that she was convinced, yes, I really am listening. And blam, there it all came, what was really on her heart. And I couldn't believe that it had taken me years to figure that out, that I, even to my wife, who in many ways knows I love her, but still she's holding back even in sharing with me because she's not certain that I'm a safe person with her stuff because she's not certain I'm listening.
And to the extent that we can just look up from our phones and our computers and just sort of shut everything down, because it's challenging with all the voices in our head to just create that space, we're actually representing the heart of God, which I think sometimes I don't think about, Gary, is I'm mostly just trying to figure out what does God want me to do, as if he's another big boss in the sky sort of thing. But God really desires mutual relationship. And there really is listening. In that Bonhoeffer quote, it talks about God lending us his ear. What does that look like in relationship with God?
It's astonishing that the God of the universe, who's somehow present out in the most distant quasars and yet also distant in the microscopic microbial world of my feet that I don't even think about, is somehow attuned and attentive to what I have to say. Most of us, because all we've experienced from our earthly families, from our interactions socially, we just project that onto God and assume that he's not interested in yet. You read the God the Father that Jesus came to reveal, he's someone who listens, who's caring, he wants to hear your laments and your needs. It's an amazing thing once you finally realize that God is actually attentive, that it's not just a one-way conversation.
And that's what we see in the Psalms, too, you know, with David crying out for help and lamenting and really concerned if he doesn't sense God's presence and just crying back out for that. That ongoing connection with God that is this sort of mutual back and forth where we're partnering together for the good of the kingdom. I mean, it's a powerful reality when we see that we're actually in friendship with God, that we aren't just his subjects to sort of robotically do his will.
No, that he actually is trying to build sons and daughters who can co-rule with him in his coming kingdom, that he wants to give us more and more responsibility. He actually cares about our input. I mean, that's one of the remarkable pieces of Scripture, that he's actually in conversation with people and helping them. He's taking their counsel, that's, you know, put that in quotation marks, but in order for them to co-labor with him in creating things, and that's the truth in our own lives as well.
For somebody out there that would like to develop that kind of dialogue with God, what are, you know, from a spiritual discipline standpoint, Gary, what are some maybe helpful practical practices that you can just start with, knowing that it takes a while to build these things in our lives?
Well, it depends on the kind of person you are. If you're really easy, distracted, extrovert like me, I had to learn to journal primarily because I couldn't even talking out loud, I couldn't even maintain a flow without being distracted. So journaling things out actually helped me maintain a flow. And then to practice, or to do something like we talked about a couple weeks ago, Lectio Divina, where I'm listening carefully to scripture, reading through it a couple times aloud, or doing it with a group of people where it's read aloud. But then I'm just sitting and listening to the text, to imagine myself in the narrative text, or to feel the weight of a more propositional text, and to say, what is the Spirit of God saying to me from that text? We often just get so rational that I've got the right interpretation of it, but the scripture is given to us that we might obey it, that we might apply it to our lives. And I would say 80% of the times that I feel like God's really communicated to something in my life, it's been through a passage of scripture.
It's Dr. Gary Stratton of Johnson University. Gary, thanks for taking the time each Friday to join us and just encourage us as we walk this out. This is the real stuff. This is where we're really living. And so to think about this ongoing relationship with God, it really just helps us here on Faith Radio Morning. So thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much, Peter. Have a wonderful weekend.
Yeah, you too. We'll take a break and wrap up our first hour of the show. Really enjoyed that first hour of the show with Carmen LeBurge. What a great conversation partner to talk through the headlines of the day. And of course, Gary Stratton, one of my favorites. And just talking about the importance of listening, I think we'd be remiss to not mention the importance of listening to our children as well. I think so often when we're in positions of power, and in this case, a parent with children, you sort of are there to just tell your children what to do, as opposed to they're actually human beings that bring a beautiful and lovely and wonderful perspective. And so as Jesus says, let the children come to me, he created space for them and he listen to them. And boy, if there's any one thing that'll hold parents and children together, it is that mutual listening trust that can happen between the two of them. Lots more to come on Faith Radio Mornings. When we come back, we'll be joined by Adam Holtz and talk movie reviews.
Again, thanks for listening to this podcast of Faith Radio Mornings. You can hear other podcasts at myfaithradio.com. Plus, remember, we are listener-supported, so your support makes Faith Radio Mornings and the other programs from Faith Radio possible. Make your gift at myfaithradio.com.